Hello, this is the trimmed down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a number of tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. Maybe the first track they heard, the first track they may have brought, a number of tracks that mark moments in their life, as well as one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Vidar Yarding, MBE. Vidar is currently the Inclusion and Diversity Consultant for ITV News across England, Wales, Northern Ireland and the Channel Islands. Vidar is also a visiting professor at Sunderland University. Vidar grew up in the northeast of England with his English mam and his Norwegian dad, with regular trips to Norway to spend time holidaying with his Norwegian relatives. Vidar studied French and German as an undergraduate at Manchester University, prior to graduating with a postgraduate degree in journalism from City University in London. Vidar is a great champion of the arts and especially accessibility of the arts for everyone, with a keen interest in 19th century literature, mainly relying on and enjoying audiobooks as he travels across the country on account of his professional work. Hello, Vidar, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much indeed, Toby. Delighted to be here.
Vidar, did you find it tricky selecting your tracks for Tracks of My Life?
I'm afraid I did, Toby. It's a pleasure to do it. It's a real honour, actually. But I have to say, narrowing it down to seven is pretty tough. But it's a good exercise, and you start out with a massive number of tracks that you think, well, I might include that, I might want to have the other or whatever. But ultimately, it's a good discipline to really narrow it down and think why, and it is very much the thinking why you want those tracks that really matters. So got there in the end, but it was a fair bit of homework, but fun homework.
Your first track takes you back to growing up in the coastal town of Whitley Bay, and school then, and moving to the grammar school in Gosforth in Newcastle.
Absolutely right, Toby. So, yes, I'm a Geordie lad by birth, and still have strong connections with that part of the country. My parents, my sister, brother-in-law and nephew are still very much up there. And it's an area that I've still got a lot of affection for. Love to go back to that part of the world when I can. So I thought we'd start, as you say, with this first track, which is very much a local song, The Waters of Tyne. And for anyone who knows that part of the country, the vista as you cross either on the train or in the car, one of those Tyne bridges, and the vista has changed because Newcastle city centre has changed a lot in the last generation or so. But it's still quite an iconic sight to see the bridges and the river and all of that. And yeah, very special memories of a lovely part of the country.
Did you have problems with your eyesight back then when you were at school? And if so, how did you cope?
So, yes, I did have some problems in the sense that I had partial sight as a child growing up. Fortunately, I was able to appreciate colour, so that's been very helpful subsequently when more of my sight has sadly disappeared. I also used magnifying glasses, and I had sufficient sight on the one eye to use a magnifier to read printed material, books, newspapers, that sort of thing. Again, unfortunately, that's no longer a possibility, but fortunately, with the development and the increased provision of audio material and obviously IT, which, you know, is a great lifeline for many with visual impairments, that's not been perhaps quite the insurmountable problem as it might ultimately have been. So I should perhaps just pay tribute to the encouragement I have from my parents, who not obviously had any experience of anyone in the family before with visual impairment. They were very pragmatic, must have been tough for them, but working in conjunction with teachers at all of the schools you mentioned and other friends and family who were hugely supportive, then, you know, that is really how I got through and hopefully made a reasonable fist of education in the Northeast.
What is it about this track, apart from the name, The Waters of the Tyne, that takes you back to that time, those days back in Newcastle and the Northeast?
Well, it might almost sound crass to say it's the melody itself, which I love. And I think because I associate it very much with the region geographically, that in turn automatically provides a link to memories of my grandparents, the wider family, particularly my parents and other members of my immediate family that I referred to a little while ago. So it is a track that immediately triggers off all of those different reflections, memories, and just realizes what a special time I had as a child growing up in that part of the world.
I cannot get to me love if I would dee. The water of Tyne runs between him and me. And here I must stand with a tear.
The Waters of the Tyne from the album The Water of the Tyne by Catherine Tickell. Vidar, your next track is part of Grieg's Piano Concerto, a composer from your father's homeland, which I think you probably would like to have been able to play on the piano yourself.
Yeah, dream on. I know. I studied the piano from the age of five and got to a reasonably high level on it, but never anything quite as mainstream and as proficient as playing one of the greatest piano concertos in classical music, in my opinion. So I love the whole work, but particularly the slow movement, the middle movement. And you're right, Toby, obviously not just loving the work itself and reminding me of Norway and my Nordic ancestry, but very much makes me think of my dad and my Norwegian aunts, uncles, cousins who, like my mother's side of the family in Newcastle, had a really important part to play in my life from a child onwards. And Norway, for those who don't know it, and I'm going to sound almost like a cracked record myself now because I talked about the beautiful geography and you know, countryside, coastal outlook in Northumberland. Norway, too, has some stunning scenery. And I've been lucky enough to go to Grieg's home by the fjord side near Bergen, where he lived and worked. And again, quite nice just to sort of think about being there as I listen to this and reflect on the very happy memories of family and relatives in Norway and the huge important part that my dad's played in my life.
This particular recording is by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. Have you ever been to see the CBSO in Birmingham?
I am very proud and pleased to say that I have been, and I live literally minutes away from this iconic artistic venue. And the Birmingham Symphony Hall, along with the more historic Town Hall, is a fantastic venue acoustically and everything else for the performing arts generally. The resident orchestra is the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. I've been going to concerts at both venues, actually, for the best part of the 30 years or so that I've been privileged to live in Birmingham. And so it's a very special place in my mind. It's somewhere I have an involvement with the charity that runs the two concert halls. And yeah, I mean, to have seen and listened to some of the world-famous names who've performed either piano music or any other form of music, or who've conducted like Sir Simon Rattle on the stage at both venues, has been absolutely thrilling. So very fortunate to have that as part of my hinterground.
Grieg's Piano Concerto with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. Next, Vida, we come to a track from one of my favourite artists, Kate Bush, and I was very lucky to go and see a live performance concert Before the Dawn back in 2014. Like many of us, I can remember seeing Kate Bush on Top of the Pops and that wonderful video of her performance. The track, of course, is Wuthering Heights. How much of an impact did Kate Bush have on you when you heard this track for the first time?
Well, quite a pronounced impact in a way, Toby. And I have to say, just before answering directly that question, I'm deeply envious of you having been to that concert. I haven't had that privilege, but I have loved her music ever since as a teenager, listening to the first time Wuthering Heights. And maybe this is the memory having a bit of a rosy glow, as sometimes things do when you reflect back on things in your earlier life. But it was a piece of music that for its time was just entirely different. And I just think was distinctive. And actually, I'd argue 40 odd years later, it still is. So it reminds me of an important part in most of our lives, perhaps for some more difficult than others. Teenage years aren't the easiest ones to navigate through. It reminds me of grammar school in Newcastle, friends, etc., and growing up, and the music scene generally. And the other spin-off, I guess, in terms of thinking about this particular track is that its title is also the title of a world-famous 19th-century novel. Its particular favourite period of literature of mine, and Emily Bronte's work is a novel I've always hugely enjoyed and still very much do. So for a whole variety of reasons, this is a really key track for me, and I think obviously performed superbly by a wonderful artist, Kate Bush.
The amazing Kate Bush Fair with Wuthering Heights, and she still has an amazing voice. Vidar, for your next track, we move from Yorkshire to France with the musical Les Miserables. As a student, you took a trip to London and you saw Les Miserables at the Barbican. What is it about this musical that brings you back time after time to see the production?
Yeah, well, as you infer there, Toby, I am a self-confessed Les Mis groupie, and that was sparked off, yeah, by that initial experience back in the mid-80s, I seem to recall now. And I almost just went as a bit of a last-minute thing. I'd recently started a postgraduate course in journalism in London at City University. I was due to meet up with friends for a matinee at the Barbican. Les Mis had just begun its initial run. It hadn't really in any way developed any of the hype that it subsequently had over the last 30 years. And in fact, those initial reviews weren't, if I remember rightly, terribly favourable. So I went not knowing what I was in for. I had read the novel at university where I'd studied French. And as I mentioned earlier, in connection with Wuthering Heights, I love the 19th century in terms of novels, both in French and English literature. And so I did have an idea of the storyline and things. But I went, I suppose, without any preconceived notions, which is not a bad place to start when you're seeing something for the first time. And 3.5 hours later, after curtain up, I came out and I was blown away by it. And I still am. And a little bit like, you know, Wuthering Heights, we said much the same. The music of not just the track I've chosen, but indeed many, if not all, of the tracks in the production are just incredibly powerful, both in terms of melody, but also in terms of lyrics and telling the story. And I love musicals as well. And again, this is one of the tough challenges when selecting just 7 tracks. You know, you'd like to take lots of different musicals. And I opted for Les Mis because ultimately it is probably my favorite stage musical. And it will remind me of musicals per se, which I think, you know, as we've seen in the numbers of people going to the West End or indeed other theatres up and down the country, have and remain a popular part of people's culture. And again, being based in Birmingham, referred earlier to the Town Hall and Symphony Hall, well, the Birmingham Hippodrome is one of the largest independent theatres in the country, and Les Mis has been there on a number of occasions, and that's been terrific. I just have to literally pop down the road, and you know, dead easy to be a groupie in that sense when it's so local, but just as powerful each time I see it. And I do, my only slight concern maybe is a bit of a strong word, but I do occasionally think, what happens if and when the magic fails? As it hasn't failed for 30 years, then I'm hopeful that it never will, so it'll always be an iconic favourite. And I think this particular track, which features nearly everybody, I think, involved in the production, is just fantastic and quite exhilarating.
One day more, another day, another destiny, this never-ending road to Calvary. These men who seem to know my crime will surely come a second time. One day more.
I did not live until today.
One Day More, from the original 1985 London production of Les Miserables. Vidar, we stay with France for your next track, which takes you back, I think, to your time studying French at Manchester University and a year teaching English on the Mediterranean island of Corsica. Why did you want to study French, and what was that year like in Corsica?
Well, it almost sounds a little bit of a flippant answer when I say at 18, thinking what I was going on to do, I wanted to go to university. I was supposedly not bad at the arts and modern languages. I was singularly hopeless at science and maths, so the choice was pretty clear. It was very much an artistic line. I loved English, I loved history, but I also felt that through languages, I would have the additional bonus of not just appreciating literature in other languages, but also travel would be part of that package, if you like, as well. And so, yeah, I went off lucky enough to get a place at Manchester University. And as is very, very often the case, and it was then too, as part of a long modern languages degree, normally it's the third of the 4 years is very much living in either as a student or working in the country where the language is the official spoken word, if you like. So I went to France, and people probably wonder, why Corsica? And my answer to that is, perhaps not surprisingly, and it may be a bit predictable, and many people might feel the same, but when you think about France, we all perhaps think of, wouldn't it be exotic to live in and work in the south of France? As a result, the competition for posts in lycées or senior schools in that part of the country was prolific. And my A-level teacher, actually, at my own school, she had spent her year abroad in Corsica and said, well, look, you know, she'd had a wonderful time. And the other thing is, on a practical level, it was possibly a more, I suppose, considered choice because slightly smaller community, not a big city to navigate around, etc., etc. So on a number of levels, that's why I opted for that and was lucky enough to procure a post in one of the local lycées in a town called Bastia. And I'm, you know, very, very touched to say that all these years later, I'm still in regular contact with people who I met during that year, who I worked with, and who have become long-standing close friends, not just of me, but of my family too. And that's been hugely important, and it's lovely to maintain those links. And through this particular track that we're about to hear, I will remember my undergraduate days, including that time abroad. And also, it's probably worth saying, Toby, that this particular Puccini track was maybe one of the very first pieces of opera that I remember listening to and being really sort of attracted to. And a bit like Les Mis, a bit like all the tracks actually that we're talking about today, I love it just as much as I ever did the first time I heard it.
And it's funny because opera can seem a little bit elitist to some people, but if you actually get the opportunity to go, it certainly is not elitist, is it?
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. And in a sense, picking up on what we talked about a little earlier about audio description, audio description is, again, a great leveler. And again, if somebody who feels, oh, well, I quite like the music, but what else would I get out of opera? Because obviously opera not only fundamentally relies on good music and what have you, but it's clearly a dramatized musical work, if you like, and there is a certain amount of acting on stage, and there are sets, and there are costumes, etc., etc. And it is a plus, I would suggest, not an absolute must, but if you possibly get the chance, then you'd be foolish not to take advantage of, you know, learning about all of that and enjoying it in the round. So, opera, I think so much depends on how you're introduced to opera, like literature, I suppose. If somebody suddenly introduces you to something that's potentially a very, very heavy work, it might put you off for life. But if you know a little bit about the story, if you know a little bit about, you've maybe had the chance to hear a couple of the tracks, particularly if they're melodic, and I would suggest that the one we're about to hear is one of the most melodic opera arias or duets that there is, it should be, and indeed, you know, increasingly must be more accessible. So I think probably our opera has had a bit of a hard time over the years. I'd like to think a wider number of patrons are enjoying it, whether it's in a theatre or, you know, in an opera house or whatever. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people in the profession who've done a lot to try and make it more accessible too. So it's a track that combines memories for me of a time in my life when I worked abroad, maintaining friendships over the decades since. And it was probably my first introduction to opera, and it's a musical genre that I've loved hitherto.
O suave fanciulla, o dolce viso, dimmi te circonfusa al balar, in terra viso, il sogno
che... Puccini's La Bohème there, and some amazing voices too. Vidar, for your next track, we move to Christmas time and the carol In the Bleak Midwinter. And I think Christmas means more to you than just presents. It's about the traditions, the literature as well, again, and also family and friends meeting up. Why is Christmas time so special to you?
Well, you're right, Toby. I mean, there's obviously a number of themes that are coming out of our conversation today. And, you know, the arts, family, friends, etc., feature once again in the reason I've chosen this particular track. I think we're very lucky to live in a world, and particularly in a country, which increasingly has not just a wide range of cultures and traditions and what have you, but more than it was in the past, perhaps not as much as still should be the case, but we're all learning from each other about our different cultures and faiths and all the rest of it. And I think that's fascinating, and the more that can be encouraged, the better. For me, Christmas has always been, as you said, particularly important. There's the fun side to Christmas, and that's not to be underestimated. But for me, without being sanctimonious or sentimental, so it's not just about, you know, the fun of Christmas, important though that is. It is very much about what Christmas represents. And again, it's a time when, arguably, for example, if you didn't keep in touch with people at any other time of the year, you possibly would still maintain links through an annual Christmas card. And it's lovely to hear how people are getting on without that annual sort of exchange of greetings. Perhaps you would lose touch with more people than sadly you would want. It makes me think of, you know, my own family, my niece, my nephew, my godchildren, my great nephew. So all of that's really, really important. I think the music, the choral tradition, carols, and the literature, as you mentioned, it won't surprise you to hear that Dickens's Christmas Carol is possibly, if I had to say what is my favorite novel, that would probably be it. But yeah, but there's a whole side to that time of the year. And I realise it can be a challenging time for many people on a practical basis if suddenly they're, you know, faced with expensive requests for presents or having to face large family gatherings and all the work that that entails and shopping and preparation. It's a stressful time and all the rest of it. So I'm not glib or starry-eyed to that extent about it. But for me, it's just an important time of the year and a time for just taking stock and thinking and what have you. And a carol like this, particularly the Gustav Holst melody, although the other one, Harold Dark's, is equally beautiful, but I've gone for this and I associate it with somewhere either like Birmingham Cathedral, which again means a lot to me, or a country church, back to my days in Northumberland and a little place called Alwinton that had a festival of nine lessons and carols that we often used to go to before Christmas as a family. So it'll make me think of some of those times too. But I hope that Christmas will continue to mean as much to me as it always has.
In the Bleak Midwinter by the choir of St Paul's Cathedral. Vidar, we now come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on to others that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Okay, so now this was probably the toughest ask of the whole exercise. Great challenge, though. And actually, when I started to think about this, Toby, it ended up being a lot more obvious than I initially thought was probably going to be the case. But I hope that during our chat today, it's become clear that I am very much a people person. I like to think I am anyway. Maybe other people would judge it differently, but hopefully I'm a people person. And as a result, you know, the song which Barbara Streisand made very much her own from the film Funny Girl has a sentence in it that certainly chimes with me, and it's people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And I think there's a huge amount of truth in that. And we're recording this at a difficult time in the lives of many people against the backdrop of the pandemic. And I think a lot is made, quite understandably, about the importance of not being isolated, of trying to keep in touch if that's what people wish to do, whether through electronic platforms, you know, Zooms and Microsoft Teams, or whether the trusty time-honored phone. However people do it, it is important, and it certainly is for me, to maintain that contact with family, with friends, with colleagues, acquaintances, etc. So if I have to, and certainly very happy to, choose something that I would want to pass on to people, and one which perhaps would give them hope, this is the track that I've chosen. And I should just add that Barbara Streisand, probably, arguably for me, has the voice which is second to none. So hugely difficult to choose one of her many, many famous acclaimed recordings. But this combines her talent as a singer and just some wonderful lyrics which sum up for me what matters and why people matter.
Thank you, Vidar Yarding, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Toby. I hope it's not been too self-indulgent, but it's been a huge pleasure and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Travel single?